Glad you're here this morning. This morning we really want to talk about what may be considered the second most important possession that you have. I believe our first most important possession we would have to admit would be our soul. We only have one. It's the one thing that's going to last throughout all of eternity. It's never going to cease to exist, and therefore we need to take care of it, make sure that we provide for its best interest, and the best interest would be our eternal salvation and making sure that we spend eternity with God in heaven when this life is over. Our second most important possession, I believe, would be our family. Families are extremely important. You only have one mom, one dad. You have only one set of siblings. In most cases, you'll only have one spouse. If you, at least that's God's design and God's plan, unless you should outlive the one and remarry. But by and far, the family is of the utmost importance. You usually only have one. And we want to talk this morning about renewing our family. Question that I want to ask you this morning, I want to raise before your attention, is what happened between here? Now, isn't that just the cutest little thing? Isn't that just great? We love little kids. I love them. They're just cute and they're precious. And they grow up. What happened between here and here? As those children go from infant to young adult, and they grow up to face the world, and they go from young adult on into adulthood and move out into the world, what can we do during that time to make sure that they have a happy, successful life? To have such a life, we need to instill in them a good set of values. At one time, parents, churches, and schools all worked together to instill good, virtuous, moral life principles. They worked together. That's not quite the case anymore, is it? Most schools, you have parents who will tell the teachers, don't discipline my child. Don't do this. Don't do that. Don't teach them moral values. Today, I'll get back to where I'm supposed to be. Many are learning those life values from celebrities, from their friends at school, from music artists, movie actors, professional athletes. They're getting their values that they're going to establish and use in their life from sources other than what God intended. Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 10, Moses says, say not thou, what is the cause of the former days, that the former days were better than these? For thou dost not inquire wisely concerning this. We look back and we talk about the good old days, even in our generation, the good old days. And we can dwell on the good old days. But Moses said that that's a waste of time to inquire about those. Can I go back to those good old days and the way things were? Some would say, why would I want to? I had to get up in the morning, milk the cow, churn the butter, gather the eggs, fry the bacon, draw water from a cold well, heat it up on the stove to take a bath. Get 9 kids ready, hook the horse up to the wagon, and go to church. strange. Usually they got their own time, didn't they? And today, with all of our modern conveniences, we still have trouble getting here on time or coming in right at the last minute, sometimes late. Sometimes that can't be helped. We're talking about a habit. The good old days. We can't go back to the way things used to be because our world is changing, but we can intensify our efforts to create the values in our children. It will involve a commitment on the part of parents, grandparents, the church. The family is God's most basic tool to encourage a healthy relationship with Him. You think about that for just a moment. The family is God's most basic tool to encourage a healthy relationship with God. So where does it start? If I want to have a healthy relationship with God, where does it start? Starts with the parent. It starts in the home. It's God's most basic. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verses 4 through 7. We've referred to this over and over in the past several weeks. But I want you to look down in the last few verses there where Moses says, "Thou shalt teach them diligently." Teach what? The law. The words which he has commanded them. "Thou shalt teach them diligently to thy children. Thou shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thy house, when thou walkest in the way, when you liest down, and when you rise up." You're do what? Teach them to your children when? All the time. When you're at home, when you're away from home. When you get up in the morning, when you go to bed at night. When you take a vacation from your job and your home, do you take a vacation from God? Do you take a vacation from your Christian values? Do you say, "Well, we're not at home this morning, so we're just not going to go. We're not going to find a place to go and worship with other Christians today because we're on vacation." I want you to remember these two things if you don't remember anything else this morning. There are two ways to teach. Instruction and example. Have you ever heard anybody say, "Do as I say and not as I do"? I am instructing you in what I want you to do, the way that I want you to act, or what I want you to accomplish. How many of you have heard the old saying, "Monkey see, monkey do"? Yeah. Well, you know, the same is true. Children see, children do. You can come to services every time the doors are open. You can read your Bible every day. You can be the most knowledgeable person. But if you don't live it, neither will your children. So let's talk this morning about these two ways, instructing. Who is to teach? God has primarily given that responsibility to the parents. It's the parents' job. It's not the school's job. It's not the church's job. It's not Hollywood's job. It belongs to the parents. The family is where life's most important lessons should be learned. And it will require a major shift in many families for this to be accomplished. Why would it require a major shift? Because the devil has done such a wonderful job at getting our attention away from what is important and centering it on things of the world. Now, when I say this, do not misunderstand me. We can get our attention centered on fine houses, big fancy new cars, the best of clothing, the most extravagant of vacations, new boats, new this and new that, to the extent that we neglect our family. Having fine homes, nice cars, clothing, jewelry, nothing wrong with those things, unless they interfere with the growth and development of your family and their relationship with God. And too many times nowadays, I know that we have to work sometimes two jobs, husband and wife both working just to make ends meet. But that's not always the case. Let's face it, we can live without some of these modern conveniences of iPads and iPods and cell phones for everybody in the family with the service plans that come with them. We can live without computers. We can live without televisions even. I know that we can because there are people in our world, in our nation, who purposefully do not have televisions in their home. They don't even have telephones, and they get along just fine. But it's because that's the way they've grown up. That's what they've become accustomed to. In Luke chapter 1 and verse 17, Luke writes, "And he shall go before him in the spirit and power of Elias to turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the just, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord." As parents, we need to have our attentions on the spiritual needs of our children. Materialism, the pursuit of pleasures, if not careful, will rob you of the energy and the resources that's needed or should be devoted to the care for your family. And at the same time, it robs you of the rewards that come from correctly setting your priorities in order. The Bible says what? Fathers, train up your children. Ephesians 6 and verse 4 says, "And you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord." Training your children is a joint effort. Matthew 12 and verse 25 says, "Jesus knew their thoughts and said to them, every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and every city or house divided against itself shall not stand." Do you realize that a house has to be united in order to survive? Mom and dad have to be in agreement on rules and regulations and expectations of their children and on the disciplinary measures to be taken if that house is to survive and if those children are to be raised and grow up with a set of values that will cause them to have a spiritual relationship with God that He wants them to have. When I was growing up, there were certain rules in our household. One of them was, if you ask one parent permission to do something and they denied you, you were not allowed to go to the other parent to get a second opinion. It just did not exist in our household. One Sunday afternoon, I thought I knew the answer because I had learned which parent to go ask permission for based on what I wanted to do. You know, kids do that. And I asked my mother if I could do something. And she says, no. I says, all right, I'm going to go ask Dad because the preacher this morning said he was the head of the household and what he said went. She says, well, you're right. He is the head of the house and what he says goes. But you remember this. I'm the neck and I turn that head whichever way I want it to look. Now you go ask him. And if he tells you yes, I'm going to give you a whooping for doing what I told you you couldn't do. And I'm going to tell him what you did and he's going to give you a whooping for asking him second. I was going to get two whoopings if I got to do what I wanted to do, and if I didn't, I was guaranteed to get one for asking him second anyway. They were united in their efforts and in their determination of what they expected from us as children, and one of them was, don't go ask the other one after I've told you no. They had their expectations when it came to discipline as well. They didn't have a problem with corporal punishment. Child abuse, yes. And sometimes I thought they abused me. But I survived, never had any broken bones or anything that didn't heal up, other than maybe my pride at times. But they used what worked. When a switch worked, I got a few stripes on my legs. And as I got older and the belts worked and the boards worked, and when that I got a little older, and you know, after a while, your hide gets a little tough. There's nothing worse than having your sister drive you around town because you're grounded from driving, and so that kind of worked. That straightened me up real quick. There were privileges that would be taken away after a while. You know, whatever works at certain stages of life, things change. Now, I was stubborn. You could beat me with the board till I was black and blue, and I was still going to do what I wanted to do. My youngest sister come along, and all Dad had to do was just look at her with a disapproving eye, and she'd just break down into tears and bawl. Worked totally different with her. Each child is different, and the way you train them and the way that you correct them is different. But training is a joint effort between parents. You can't have one doing one thing and another doing it another way. There is instruction. Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 12 says, and if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. You take a piece of cord and you can easily break it. You weave it together with two other cords, and you've got three cords, and it's hard to break. To raise our children, we're going to have to take advantage of every resource that we have. So while it's true that church attendance cannot take the place of Bible instruction in the home, it is a valuable support tool. And there's the key word that you need to be looking for, and that is the idea of support tool. Anything that will support you in training up your children, your grandchildren, should be something you would consider. While the home, the church, and the school unite their efforts to impart good values to the next generation, it's much more difficult for Satan to get his foot in the door. And you notice that the home, the church, and school. It used to be that the school's on our side. they're not so much on our side these days. Is there a way that we can change that? We tell the government to get out of the family. What the government, okay. We can do a number of things. We can take our children out of public school and put them into private school. Now that is expensive, and that's not an option for everybody. We can take our children out of school and teach them at home. And that's not an option for everybody if both parents are working and you have no one to do the instructing. That makes it kind of difficult. We can get involved in our school system as parents, as taxpayers, as grandparents, as people who live in our community to influence the moral standards in our local schools, can we not? There are a number of things that we can do, some things that we need to take advantage of. The one thing we do not need to do, in my opinion, is to allow the schools and the world to take away any more than they've already taken away. We have just as much right as citizens in this country as they do.
When you got one in school, you definitely come home.
As I say, you know, it's different things work for different kids in different times in their life. But yes, I spent several hours in the principal's office growing up. Of course, I spent several hours in the bedroom at home growing up, too, because if I got in trouble at school, I got in trouble at home. They always sent a note home, and if I didn't bring it back signed the next day, they called the house and says, hey, we need to tell you about Ken. He's supposed to have had a note signed by you and brought back to us today, and he didn't bring it back. And they knew my parents' signature, so there was no way I could forge it. Things that work. Instructing. This is what you need to do. This is how you need to live. These are some things that you need to pay attention to, my son, if you want to live a happier, healthier, longer life. The second way, the second thing that is involved is example. Paul said in 1 Timothy 4, be thou an example of the believers in conversation, in word, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Be thou an example. Our children watch our example. They see what is important to us. If the church is important, we'll be there. If the church is sponsoring an activity, we'll be there. If the church is having a work day, and I missed this one yesterday, if possible, we'll be there. Why? Because it's important to us. Children grow up to play sports because we take them to the sports events. We encourage them to get involved in sports. And teen sports is a good thing. Learn how to cooperate and work as a team. But that's not the most important thing. Philippians 4, verse 8, Paul says, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, and whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things." There was a time in our home when the television would have some kind of filthy word or vulgar appearing picture. And Dad would say, "Change that channel." And don't go back to it, at least till that show is over. You're not watching that. Nowadays, how many of us even notice the vulgar language on our TV programs? How many of us even pay attention to the obscene pictures, the scantily dressed men and women? I don't watch the soap operas. I used to watch one of them as a kid because, well, Mama did. And during the middle of the day in the summer when we were breaking green beans, we'd go inside and we'd break those in the house. And she had this one program she turned on, and she finally quit watching it. But, and it wasn't that particularly filthy of a program, but nowadays you turn that on and you see people who on the program claim not to be married and in the bed together. And what does that say to your children when they see you watching that kind of thing? What kind of image does it put into their head? What kind of teaching are they learning? Is it pure? Is it wholesome? Is it honest? If it's not, don't put it in. Don't think on it. 2 Corinthians 10, verses 4 through 5, Paul says, "For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal." They're not guns, they're not bows and arrows, they're not knives, spears, swords. They're not tanks, and airplanes, and bombs. They're not carnal. "But mighty through God to the pulling down of the strongholds, casting down imaginations, and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God." Our war is not carnal. Our war is against imaginations. Our war is against things that exalt themselves to be more important than our knowledge of God. He continues there in verse 5. He says, "And bringeth into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ." What is my job? What am I to do? I'm to bring my thoughts into obedience to Christ. I see this image, or I read this story, or I whatever it comes my way. Is temptation wrong? Temptation is not wrong. I'm going to be tempted. There are thoughts that are going to come into my mind. There are things that are going to happen to me. Temptation is not wrong. What's wrong is when I allow myself to dwell on that temptation. Paul says, bring that thought into captivity. Realize what it is, gather it up, bind it up, and get rid of it. Put it out of your mind. 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, be not deceived, evil communications corrupt good morals. When it comes to our children, when it comes to us, be aware that if you lie down with dogs, you're going to what? Wake up with fleas. If you run around with the wrong crowd, Paul says, most of the time, the wrong crowd will influence you. You'll find yourself drinking. You'll find yourself doing things that ought not to be done. Question. What can I do? One, start early. Start training your children early. When they're 2 years old and you tell them you cannot have a popsicle, and they go get a popsicle out of the fridge, or they throw a fit till one of their brothers or sisters goes and gets one out of the fridge and gives it to them to shut them up. Take corrective action on the 2-year-old. I'd say take corrective action on the sister or brother too. Start early. If you start teaching early, you instill within them those principles from an early age. Keep your children involved in activities for young folks, for people their age. Spend time with strong Christian families who have children close to the same age as your children. It's great to have playmates, isn't it? Even as we get older, we like to have playmates. We like to have help in the gardening. We like to have someone go with us when we go to hunt or to fish or to play cards. You know, playing cards by yourself is not that much fun after a while. Our children need to be involved with people of the same age. When you have an opportunity to visit Christian campuses, colleges, campus ministries, remember that the word in Deuteronomy that says, teach your children, means to write or to engrave or to imprint or impress upon their heart the word of the Lord. Remember, it's a 2-part process. It's instruction. You must teach them. And it's example. You must live it. And finally, spiritual renewal is a family affair. It requires putting children ahead of career advancement. It requires putting them ahead of personal pleasure. Building a strong Christian home is a fun and rewarding way to renew your relationship with God. The question, is it time for you to turn your heart back to your family? We talk about our career. We want to advance in our career. We want to make more money. We want to have a higher standard of living. That's natural. That's human. That's ordinary. But don't do that to the sacrifice of your family and your family's relationship to God. Your family is more important than your career. you can always get another job. I've always found it to be true that when you seek God and you put Him first, He finds a way to take care of those other things. Amen. Don't put your family behind your personal pleasure. It's okay to go fishing if your family don't like to go fishing. It's okay to go hunting. It's okay to play video games. But don't do those exclusively to the detriment of your family relationship and time that should be spent and needs to be spent with your children. Those children will grow up someday quicker than we know, and they'll be gone. And if we want them to have a relationship with them after they have grown and gone from the nest, we need to develop it while they're young and at home. I found it true a long time ago that the only people on this earth that have nothing to gain by your happiness and your success in life is your parents. So why not listen to your parents? Why don't we instill within our children the idea that God is number one? Thank you this morning.